Could I ask that my colleagues take their seats, please? Good evening. My name is Mark Laredo, Counselor at Large from Ward 7. I'm the chair of the Land Use Committee. This is a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee. We have a fair number of folks with us this evening. I'm going to introduce my colleagues from the City Council. I'm going to try to get everybody on the staff. I'll try to get almost everybody on the staff if I can. And then I'm going to have the Planning and Development Board introduce its members. I'll go briefly over what our agenda is going to be this evening, and we're going to get right to work. We will finish no later than 10 o'clock this evening. To my immediate left is Councilor Jim Cote, Councilor at Large from Ward 3 and a member of the committee. Next to him is Councilor Deb Crosley, Councilor at Large from Ward 5 and a member of the committee. Behind Councilor Crosley is Councilor Susan Albright, a Councilor at Large from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. To my immediate right is Councilor Jake Auchincloss, Councilor at Large from Ward 2 and a member of the committee. Behind him is Lyle Baker, Ward Counselor from Ward 7 and President Emeritus of the Board, or now the Council, not a member of the committee. And next to Councilor Baker, to my far right, is Councilor Emily Norton, Ward Counselor from Ward 2, not a member of the committee. Staff, we have far right is Neil Cronin from the Planning Department, Alexandra Anant, also from the Planning Department. And before I go further, I want to acknowledge that Ms. Anant is taking a break from the Planning Department in three more weeks officially? And really, we haven't had a chance to publicly acknowledge her hard work and dedication to the Planning Department for the years I've been here, and I know over a decade before that, or about a decade before that. She's really done an outstanding job for us, put in a lot of long hours, worked very, very hard, and was a very strong voice for the Planning Department, and we're going to miss her, but I know she's having some real adventures over the next year, which sound great. So I just want to take a moment, if we could, to thank her for all her hard work. And I know her official retirement date was the end of April, but she's been gracious enough to actually agree to work several days in May to help facilitate transition. So thank you very much again for everything you've been doing and done. Next to Ms. Anant is Robert Waddick from the Legal Department. Next to him is Rita Young, also from the Legal Department. Our Director of Planning, Barney Heath. Frankly, you don't get an introduction. You work for the petitioner. You're just up here working the computer. And behind him is Nadia Khan, our committee clerk. Peter, would you introduce your colleagues, please?
Yes, I'm Peter Doringer, Vice Chair of the Planning Board. To my left is Megan Merov, Sonia Fariska, Jonathan Yeo, and at a different table, but present, is our ex officio member, Barney Heath.
All right. We had several items on for this evening, a consistency ruling which has been postponed, and two items which I'm going to read into the record and are being postponed to June 3rd, excuse me. Do I need a quick vote on that? All right. So the first item, 43-17, a special permit to extend a non-conforming two-family use at 893 Watertown Street, James and Carol Hoops. This is in Ward 3. We're going to postpone this to June 6th. I need a motion from a committee member. Moved by Councilor Cote. All in favor of postponing to June 6th? I've got 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 in favor, none opposed. The next item is 38-17, special permit to exceed FAR at 1016 Center Street, Claudine Grossman, Ward 7. Also a request to postpone this to June 6th. Can I have a motion on that, please? Councilor Cote. All in favor of postponement? 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 in favor, none opposed. That item is also postponed to June 6th. Our next items are what I expect everyone's really here for this evening. 95-17, change of zone petition for Washington Street, Mark Newtonville, LLC. A change of zone for what is known as the Ore Building Project. I won't read all of it into the record. I think we're all quite familiar with it. It's in Ward 2. And then 96-17 is special permit petition for Washington State for the same project. So the public is clear. We are considering two items. The first is a zoning change. The second is a special permit. By way of introduction, before we let the petitioner begin, as I think everyone in this room is probably quite familiar with, this matter, these petitions were before us previously and then withdrawn at the request of the petitioner, withdrawn without prejudice, the withdrawal was approved, and they come in with a different plan. The special permit, as I understand it, is virtually the same, but the requested relief for the zoning is different. And I'm going to ask when Attorney Bookbinder comes up to present that he explain that. The protocol we're going to observe this evening is as follows. I'm going to let Attorney Bookbinder make his presentation. I hope it's no more than 15 minutes or so. And then we're going to work on the board order. The board order, if you recall, we had started working on previously when this matter was before us as a prior petition. I'd like to take up where we left off. I think there's some very considerable discussions that we need to have on the board order. If there is time this evening, I then will take public comment this evening. It's my intent to hold the public hearing open. In other words, we are taking this up again on May 30th. That's not a regularly scheduled meeting of the Land Use Committee, but we have called the committee. We have an extra Tuesday in May. We're going to use it. My intent is that night to take any and all public comment that people want to make. I will anticipate a motion to close the public hearing that night. I anticipate a motion to act on the petition that night, with the intent being that it goes before the City Council on the first Monday in June, which is June 5th, so that the City Council, if it's not acted on June 5th, it will be acted on June 19th. If I get my dates right, but I want this acted on, if possible, one way or the other before the summer recess, because typically we do not take up major projects during the course of the summer because of so many vacation schedules. So that's the broad protocol for what we're going to deal with this evening. I'm going to certainly hope that the planning board is able to be here on the 30th and will keep its public hearing open as well. I really would like to try to work on the board order. We spent an inordinate amount of time in this process getting public comment, and I don't want to demean or belittle any of the public comment we've received. Public comment is vital. It informs our work. It's the right of citizens to address their government. We take that very seriously. It's very important. At the same time, we do need an opportunity, and you want us to have an opportunity, frankly, to deliberate carefully, to deliberate in a considered fashion, so we can craft a board order. Whether you like the project ultimately or not, if it's approved, the board order is going to govern what the project looks like, and we try to take particular care in this committee to craft board orders that make sense, that are workable, that meet the needs of the community. Again, even if one does not agree with the project ultimately, and I'm not going to predict how my colleagues will or will not vote, we want the best possible order before them. Finally, before you begin, Attorney Bookbinder, I've spoken with Ms. Young about what we can do to incorporate prior comment and prior opinions on this project. And I've been advised, and I believe it's correct, that I'm going to publicly make it clear that we are going to incorporate by reference anything and everything that has been presented to us in a public forum previously in connection with the previously filed petition. In other words, if somebody wrote a letter to us previously for the last petition, we're going to consider it as part of this one. Ms. Young, is that acceptable to you? So when people do have an opportunity to speak, I would really urge them, you can say whatever you want, but it will be particularly helpful to try to talk about things in the board order or things that are new, as opposed to things that you may have said in a previous occasion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I have a question.
Of course.
Process. I'm here tonight because I'm I didn't know about the special meeting on the 30th, but I'm going to be out of town. So I was particularly interested in to hear the presentation of the petition tonight, but I was also hoping to hear at least a brief comment about it, even if you have time, because I can't stay for the entire conversation about the board order. So is it possible to at least have some limited public comment on the petition so I'll understand the context?
Councilor Baker, respectfully, we've had so much public comment on this petition at this point. I think comments been heard a lot. I want people to have an opportunity to have comments.
Well, I understand, but there's a modified proposal before us, as I understand it, correct?
We need an opportunity to work on this board order. If we here's my fear, quite bluntly. We could have public comment tonight, okay? We can let everyone talk. We'll take all the time. We still want to craft it a board order, all right? We need to craft a board order, and I want public comment on the board order. It's complicated. There are pieces of it. I'll give you an illustration. Workforce housing provision, okay? That's something that they've talked about. We have had no debate in committee on something that's really important, significant. So I really am going to...
I understand that, but I just want to be clear. There's an amended petition before us. It's different in the form than the petition we had before us, as I understand it.
The changes to the zoning relief requested, and I think Attorney Bookbinder is going to explain it.
I understand that. I just would like to have the opportunity to have some comment about that. The rest of the project, I've heard those comments before. I understand you got to work on the board order.
I thought the public
hearing tonight was on the question of the rezoning, so that's why I'm here.
The problem, Councilor Baker, is this. If I open up the public comment at this juncture, I can't and won't tell people what they should say or shouldn't say. Nor am I going to cherry pick from members of the audience as to who gets to speak first. That's not been the custom. So I appreciate that you're going to be out of town on the 30th. I'm sorry you're not going to be available. There will, of course, be audio tape. I'm sure that the people who have concerns will provide us written commentary, but I'm really, for trying to run the meeting, I'm going to have to try to stick to what we've proposed.
Well, I would encourage then, Mr. Chairman, you're in charge of the meeting, but I would encourage those who have concerns about the amended proposal to communicate with all of us in advance of the 30th, because that's important.
I'd urge them to do that as well. We have had...
Or if they agree with it, I'm not...
And they can speak as well. We've had numerous letters, and I fully expect we'll get more, and we welcome that. But let's see how far we get, Councilor Baker, because if we can get to some public comment tonight, by all means, I'd like to take it, okay? So, Attorney Bookbinder, would you tee us up, please?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Use Committee, Mr. Chairman of the Planning Board, members of the Planning Board. For the record, my name is Stephen Bookbinder. I'm an attorney with the law firm of Schlesinger and Bookbinder, with offices at 1200 Walnut Street in Newton Highlands. I'm here this evening on behalf of the petitioner, Mark Newtonville, LLC. The proposed project, as you know, requires a change of zone to a mixed-use for a portion of the site and various special permit relief. My presentation this evening will be brief. First, I want to give you a brief overview of the proposed development, certainly in summary form, because I know you're all familiar with it. Next, I want to discuss the nature of the zone change that the petitioner is seeking. And finally, I want to run through very quickly, again in summary form, the anticipated benefits of the project. So, as you know, the site, which is outlined here in yellow, is located at the corner of Washington Street and Walnut Street in Newtonville. It contains approximately 123,956 square feet. The proposed project is identical to the project which has been previously approved. As you'll recall, it consists of three buildings up to 5 stories tall with a maximum height of 60 feet. A large outdoor plaza is incorporated into the design to provide a meaningful pedestrian experience at the site. The project includes over 17,000 square feet of dedicated outdoor space in the form of both the interior plaza and the addition to the sidewalks on Washington Street and Walnut Street, which can be enjoyed by patrons of the commercial space, residents of the building, and the general public. There are 351 parking stalls proposed for the site, and there's ample bicycle storage. There are 160 residential units planned on the 3 and 4 stories above the ground floor. Of the 160 residential units, there are 16 studios, 75 one-bedroom, 63 two-bedroom, and 6 three-bedroom. In terms of the affordability component, we propose 15% inclusionary in accordance with the city's bylaw, and an additional 10% for what we've called middle-income or workforce households. And those units, by the way, would be deed-restricted in the same manner as the inclusionary units. With respect to the site, this is down in the garage. There are 4,600 square feet of commercial space over in the corner. The rest is parking. When we get up to the ground floor, you'll see commercial space starting here and looping over in an L shape. This is the outdoor plaza here. As you may recall, there is a pedestrian plaza entrance here, and there is also a connection off of Walnut Street into the plaza. On the main floor, there are about 32,000 square feet of commercial space and 108 parking stalls at grade, with 243 parking stalls in the basement. On the second floor, there's approximately 2,030 square feet of community space, which we would propose, which could be used for an arts dissimilar program. Over the last week or so, there has been some discussion between our client and the Foster Street neighbors in an effort to address some of their concerns. One of those concerns has been the entrance ramp to the garage. That ramp initially, Franklin, can you go back one set to the prior site plan? Just okay, so that garage, here we go, initially was in this location, but we had been asked to consider moving it over to this location. And as you'll see on this alternative site plan, this is a proposal. And we feel that that not only accommodates some of the concerns raised by our neighbors in Foster Street, but Mr. Cliff actually thinks it probably is an improvement. So that's something that we would finalize between now and the next meeting on May 30th. With regard to the zone change, initially, we could try to rezone the entire site. This proposed rezone differs in that only a portion of the site is proposed for rezoning. As noted, the site contains just short of 124,000 square feet. We're proposing that about 93,000 square feet, this area here, which would encompass the footprint of the building and some of the parking, that portion of the site be rezoned to a mixed-use square district. In addition, the remaining 31,000 and change square feet back here, we're proposing to leave that portion of the site in its current zoning. The boundaries for the proposed Millennium 4 zone were partially created in response to the law department's interpretation of the requirements for a protest petition under Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 48, Section 5. By way of background, that provision states, in effect, that if a protest petition is filed by the owners of 20% or more of the area of land immediately adjacent to the area to be rezoned, extending 300 feet therefrom, then a zone change must be approved by a three-quarter vote of the legislative body rather than a two-thirds vote. The language, immediately adjacent, extending 300 feet therefrom, is not as clear as one might hope. We believe that there's no Massachusetts case law precedent governing the interpretation of this provision. The law department, in this instance, interpreted the subject language differently from the manner in which it had interpreted the same language on two previous occasions, as is their right and a fact which the law department has readily acknowledged. Under the city's prior interpretation of the statute, the protest petition here would not have met the city's 20% threshold to change the vote from two-thirds to three-quarters. In its opinion, the law department also points out that in other jurisdictions, courts have recognized the landowner's right to create a buffer zone between an area of land to be rezoned and its neighbors. The revised configuration, which we have submitted for review this evening, allows the project to proceed with the requirement of a two-thirds vote in accordance with the city's current interpretation of the statute. And thus the petitioner now is in the exact same place it would have been under the city's prior interpretation of the statute. I would point out, simply as an aside, that the creation of a buffer in instances such as this could provide a template for the council to consider when reviewing future projects. Now, in terms of the special permit relief, there are only a few substantive changes from our previous submittal, and they are related to the lot area per unit and FAR. This is because, although the boundaries of the property have not changed, we have only included that portion of the property to be rezoned ME4 in calculating FAR and lot area per unit and actually other dimensional requirements as well. So the revised lot area per unit is approximately 581 square feet, and the revised FAR is 2.49 square feet. There is no requirement to stay on the lot area per unit. The council has the ability to waive that from 1,000 down to zero. And on the FAR, the operative number is 2.5, which is allowed by special permit. The other special permit relief is listed in tab 8 of the project binder we previously provided to you. I don't need to run through it. As you know, the project also provides several benefits to the city. The petitioner has agreed to fund and construct, as part of the project, major improvements to the Washington Street and Walnut Street intersection, including a dramatic reduction of the width of the crosswalks and upgrades to the signalization. It has also greatly increased the sidewalk width along Washington and Walnut Streets, as you've heard previously, for better pedestrian experience. As we've noted, 25% of the proposed units will be affordable, with 15% satisfying the city's inclusionary zoning ordinance and 10% set aside for middle-income households. The project will also be LEED Gold certified, and I just want to emphasize, not certifiable, but certified. Additionally, apart from these improvements, which we consider part of the project, the petitioner has also agreed to provide the city additional benefits totaling $1 million. $300,000 of that sum has been set aside for a pilot program for a transit-oriented program, which will give subsidies encouraging the use of less cars and the use of public transportation. Additionally, there's another $700,000 for off-site improvements. It's ultimately up to the council to decide how to spend those funds. We have, though, in discussions with the planning department, identified some possibilities. They include providing bike lanes on both sides of Walnut Street from Woodinville Avenue to Foster Street, installing a bike sharing station, providing streetscape improvements on the east side of Walnut Street across from the project from Washington Street to the Brennan Building, which would mirror those that we're doing as part of the project on the west side of Walnut Street, and also, if it's desired, burying utility lines on the south side of Washington Street across from the project. In addition to the foregoing, the petitioner has agreed to contribute $782,880 to the city for infiltration and inflow at the site. The planning department is generally supportive of the project. It finds that it's consistent with the comprehensive plan and the intent of the mixed-use square village zoning district. And that completes my remarks.
Thank you. I'm going to open it up to questions from my colleagues, Attorney Bookbinder. Councilor Baker, this may be a particularly opportune time for you to raise your questions, at least initially. Just before we do, we've been joined by Councilor Jay Harney, ward counselor from Ward 4, and a member of the committee. Attorney Bookbinder, one question about the new entranceway to the garage. Has that been run by the city engineering or planning folks at all yet?
Not yet, but we would intend to do so unless we're encouraged not to do so this evening.
Have you internally, I just want to get a sense, have you done your internal reviews about turning radiuses and things of that nature? Are you comfortable that from a safety point of view, this is as good or better than what you had previously?
Yes, we are.
Okay. All right. Good. All right. Councilor Baker, I'll let you tee it off. We've been joined by Councilor Rick Lipoff, Councilor Large from Ward 8, and a member of the committee.
I got a couple of questions just in response. The first is, you had indicated that the some of the dimensional requirements were now being run against a smaller footprint, that is the zone change space, or the amount of the site that's actually being proposed for rezoning. And I wasn't quite clear what the impact of that was. Part of your presentation, if I missed it, I apologize.
Yes, the SAR went from approximately 1.91, I think, and Steve, you correct me if I'm wrong, to 2.49. The lot area per unit went to 581. It had been approximately 750.
So the net effect is that this is a higher SAR and a lower square foot per unit is the result of the reduction in the size of the space that's being used. Is that correct?
From a totally technical point of view, yes, but of course we still have the same land mass that we had before. We just chose not to count it in the calculation.
Okay. Second question is that, as I understand it, as you've indicated, the area that is not being sought for rezoning but is owned by the petitioner that is part of the project remains in its current zoning. My memory is that there's a sort of a patchwork of zoning on the site now. What is the current zoning for that component?
There's some BU1, some BU2, and Bailey Place, which is a private way as a part of it as well. The city considers that public use, but we plan to discontinue that as part of this process.
So I'm just trying to understand if there's a component of the project that is in effect outside, as I understand, the scope of the special permit, or is the special permit now being applied to the whole project or the narrower scope land?
I think it's the zoning change for a portion of the project with a special permit for all of it.
Yes.
Okay. So is the relief for the portion that is not now part of the rezoning somehow different because you've taken it out of the system? In other words, is there something that's no longer available? Is that, I'm just trying to understand whether the reduction produces any change in the capacity to seek relief because you have not included it.
That is just parking and an access way, and my understanding from reviewing this with city officials is that those would be permitted as of right in the underlying zoning.
And then finally, just to be clear, as I hear it, law department now is of the view, and as the law department is here, that because the site has been narrowed, that the distance involved for potential protest is now no longer available. The protest is no longer available, so this is now a two-thirds vote and not a three-quarters.
Why don't we let Ms. Young just respond to that on the record, please?
The analysis is clearly set out in my original memo as to how I came down with the conclusion that the immediately adjacent language was key to the calculation, and also noted that in other jurisdictions before this was even thought of by the developer, but to be a comprehensive summary for the city council, that there are instances in which split lots are rezoned, allowing a naturally created buffer by the property owner to break that immediately adjacent land, so that again this would go back to a three-quarters vote, not the supermajority that would otherwise be required. It would be a 16 vote, just like the special permit.
Yeah, two-thirds.
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 I'm sorry, 16.
as long as we're still 24 councilors.
24.
For the time being, we are. Okay, those are the questions I have at the moment. Thank you.
Pass on the editorializing, Councilor Baker, on that last piece. Councilor, all set, Councilor Baker? Of course. Councilor Albright and Norton.
I had a question about the undergrounding. So you mentioned the south side of Washington Street, but the as we just learned recently in public facilities, the poles go down Washington Terrace, as well. What about those poles?
I'm going to tag team and David Roach for more development.
As part of the proposed project, the poles that currently go down Washington Terrace also will be, all of the utilities will be relocated underground.
Okay, great. Thank you.
At your expense.
Yes.
Okay. All set, Councilor Albright? Councilor Norton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wanting to ask another question about this rezoning. I am really troubled by what it looks like we're trying to do here. So, Chapter 48, Section 5, as I understand it, sets a higher burden for approval if a certain number of abutters have expressed opposition to the zoning change, presumably because they are disproportionately affected. And in this case, and probably many cases, but in this case, they're not just affected by the 20 feet behind their backyards on Foster Street, but by the entire property that's under consideration here. So I'm trying to understand how this new rezoning plan does not thwart the intent of state law.
Is that a question for the petitioner, for our legal department?
Anyone who wants
I'm not going to answer that question. I'm not skilled enough to do it. Attorney Bookbinder, you want to take a crack at that, and then I'll...
Yeah, again, I think one has to recognize, as this statute is not crystal clear, okay, to say the least. As it was interpreted previously by the same law department, on those occasions the law department came up with a conclusion. Under that scenario, this post-test petition would have failed. The law department has now come up with a different interpretation, which, by the way, they have every right to do. Under this interpretation, as Michelle noted, there's case law that says that one has the ability to create this buffer zone. So I think my response to you is, we're reacting to rules which have been put in place by others. And we started on one path, had a little bit of a curveball, and now we're coming back in a different manner. But, in terms of the intent of the law was drafted by the legislature, and those are the interpretations which have been given.
Ms. Young, do you want to add to that, or Mr. Waters?
I just want to comment that if you read my memo, it's very clear that the language is the first and foremost point of interpretation on a statute. And that's all I did was interpret the statute to the best of my ability. If the court wants to conclude to the contrary, they're certainly able to do that, or the law can be changed.
Thank you, Ms. Young, and I did read your memo as I read all of your memos.
I've read the memo too. In fairness to all of us, it's pretty complicated stuff. And I think Ms. Young has really done an outstanding job trying to guide us here on the intricacies. But I think it's also fair to say this is their interpretation. We're free as counselors to disregard or differ with that interpretation or go however we so choose. And certainly if a court ultimately looks at this, they may agree or disagree. I mean, I think that's we're not giving away any secrets here. That's obviously something that happens with special permits and zone changes all the time. But we, for now, I think quite appropriately need to rely not on what Attorney Bookbinder is telling us, but on what our legal department is telling us, and that's what we're doing. Okay. Any other questions for the petitioner for planning at this point? Yes, Councilor Albright.
I just have one more question, and it's about the mitigation funds. How much was it for mitigation?
It's $1 million in total.
Okay.
And then the suggestion has been to break it down $300,000 for the transit demand fund, and then another $700,000, whatever you want to do with it. We've made some suggestions only in consultation with planning, and we recognize that some people will say, well, don't underground the utilities across the street, let's do something else. We've committed the funds.
So the undergrounding comes out of the 700?
That would come out of 700.
I think it's
the energy across the street, not on Washington Terrace.
There's two underground, just so we're clear, there's two undergrounding components. Washington Terrace,
yeah,
which they're paying for.
Part of the project.
the project site itself, which they're paying
part of
for,
the project.
And the south side of Washington Street, which is going to cost a certain amount of money, they're willing to put up the money. We as a group, and I think that's one of the issues we're going to talk about tonight, is that the best use of those funds? How much is it going to cost? I don't know where you come out at, Councilor Albright. You know how I feel about the underground utilities, but it's a decision for us as a whole.
Well, the other elephant in the room is, you know, now we've learned a whole lot more about the train station and that we're looking for a two-track solution all along the line, and putting some money into a fund to deal with that is something that should also be on the table.
All fair game, I think, for us, and I think when we get to the point in the board order where we're just debating what we do with the funds, perfectly appropriate to discuss that. I don't think we've had that conversation in committee yet.
Okay, we'll have that conversation.
I would encourage it. All right, anything else at this point? Okay, we're going to turn to the board order, so who's going to walk us through that? Nope. Sit down, please. Nope. Sit down, please. Ms. Anant, will you start us off? There will be plenty of opportunity for people who wish to be heard either later this evening or when we take this up on the 30th. I'm sorry, I did not hear that, sir. The planning board is here, the planning board chair is here. I'll certainly defer to however he wants to proceed, but we in this committee are going to take up the board order.
For the moment, we're going to stay here in public session.
Okay. Ms. Anant. Let's do the schedules and then we'll go back. Okay. All right, so Ms. Anant just reminded me that we went through the findings once, we went through the conditions once, we've not gone through any of the schedules. Once we do all this, we're going to go back, I think, and try to make sure that we've crafted language in the right way. Depending on where we are in the process, if the schedule gets us to a pretty good place, Ms. Anant, maybe we'll take an opportunity to get public comments started this evening, and then finish it up at the next session. I think we'll see how it goes. So why don't you walk us through it, please, if you would.
Okay, so I'm turning to the draft order. And towards the back of the order, after page 22, we have a bunch of schedules, Schedule A through I, I believe. So Schedule A lists the relief that the petitioner needs for this building. I'll just give him a minute.
Ms. Anant, before you go further, I think the planning board wants to do something with this public hearing, and then we'll continue our work.
I move that we adjourn our hearing for this evening.
Any discussion on the adjournment? So it's my understanding that we're going to, on the 30th here, public comment on the zoning change, which is what we're here for. So, all in favor of adjourning?
Just so we're clear, we may get to public comment later this evening. That's your prerogative.
Yep, and we do have a member of the planning board who is staying for comment. Peter is our subcommittee to report back to us on any public comment relating to the zoning change versus the special permit.
Councilor Baker?
Chairman, I understand that you can't take public comment, but I did want to just inquire as to the issues that would have been raised, and they did relate to the planning board, whether there's a subdivision plan, whether there's a certain degree of issues that go to the site plan review, which is, I guess, part of your purview, as it's independent of the zone change. So if you wish to entertain those issues, you may want to hear them independently, but that's up to the planning board. I just wanted to report that that's my understanding.
I appreciate the report, Councilor Baker. That's, you know, frankly, it's out of our jurisdiction. I think it's useful to give it to the chair of the planning board. They can do it as they see fit.
I think relative to site plan review, that's the purview of the planning department. We've, in my 11 years, we've never been involved in any site plan review.
It's my interpretation, not their statement, but there were questions about whether there's a subdivision plan been filed, whether there are various issues about the design of the street, the access, and things like that, which I gather may be part of your purview. I don't know. I'm just reporting that in case you wish to hear those independently this evening so you could take advantage of them or not. That's your choice, not mine. Okay?
Thank you.
Are you moving to adjourn your hearing? Okay. All right. Ms. Anand, why don't you take us through the schedules, if you would, please. Could you make sure the... Thank you.
Schedule A lists the relief sought necessary for this project under the MU4 zone, which is where the building lies. There are, as Attorney Schlesinger mentioned, sorry, book binder.
Oh, yeah. There
are two-dimensional standards that need to be updated in Schedule A, but otherwise all of the substantive relief is the same. The only thing that's going to change is the FAR and the lot area per unit based on the reduced size of the zone.
Just for the benefit of my colleagues, Schedule A is a simple statement of all the various relief sought. That's what's in the special permit application. Planning departments vetted it, confirmed it, and the zoning review memo vetted it, confirmed this is the relief they need.
Correct.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions on Schedule A? All right. Looks pretty routine to me.
Yep.
Go ahead, please.
Schedule B is also very routine, and we haven't filled it out yet. It is the list of final plans that the board will approve, so we... Once the project is final, we fill that
and
in.
And do we have the plans that we've been given to date are close to final but not final?
They're close to final. Like Attorney Bookbinder stated, the garage move is not in the current set of plans, but for all practical purposes, the outlines of the buildings are.
And just so the public is quite clear about this, we're not taking this on blind faith that the petitioner's just given us a great set of plans. Our planning department looks at this stuff very carefully. They make sure that the plans work, that they've gone through them carefully. We are lay people, we're elected officials, with the exception of Councilor Crosby, who can actually read these plans. But we have to rely on every special permit I've been involved with on our planning department to make sure that they're accurate, appropriate, and proper. They're all, of course, certified by an architect or other design professional. That's kind of an industry standard. I just want people to be clear that the plans are, they're just not given by the petition, so here, go do it. These are looked at carefully.
Correct.
Go ahead, please.
And when they submit for building permit and occupancy permits, we review those plans against the board reference plan.
Okay.
So, Schedule C is the engineering division memo. We've been through this before. This is where the I&I contribution is listed.
So let me ask you a question. Do we usually include a memorandum from the engineering department, or do we include simply some kind of statement of what they're going to do? And I'm asking as a question, I don't know.
We can do either. I think I've probably seen it done both ways. The reason to put in the memo is it is very clear how they arrived at the calculation.
Colleagues, is there a preference? Again, this is probably more of a technical issue than substantive, because I think we all hope to get the same substantive goal, but is there any preference one way or the other here? Councilor Crosby?
I'm not sure why we would have a preference. Are you saying that the exact same language would go in as a condition versus having a Schedule C? Really, the exact same language? Or
we will do both.
will Schedule C also actually show the calculation that we've been privy to?
Correct. Schedule C shows
the calculation. So Schedule C is a bit more informative.
More
in depth. If we wanted to track from special permit to special permit, we might be better able to do so if you have the schedule.
Sure.
Okay.
Ms.
Then that would be my preference.
Ms. Young, Mr. Waddick, do you have any preference from a legal point of view? Except for the spelling of my first name, it looks great. All right. Are we comfortable, colleagues, that we're going to leave it as a memo form for Schedule C? Is that okay? All right, let's leave it that way. Go on, please.
Okay, Schedule D is sort of the first substantive schedule that you might want to discuss. This lists out the improvements that the $700,000would be associated with. So this talks about the bike facilities on both sides of Walnut Street, from Foster Street to Newtonville Avenue, the bike sharing station at a location to be agreed upon by the petitioner and the Director of Transportation, streetscape improvements on the east side of Walnut Street, consistent with the improvements on the west side, as well as the Walnut Street corridor. And the petitioner is also proposing to bury the utility lines on the south side of Washington Street, adjacent to the train, opposite their building, so from Washington Terrace to Walnut Street.
Okay.
Alternatively, this gives the petitioner, at the city's option, the ability to make a lump sum payment to the city for the city to complete the work.
So let me tee up the discussion a little bit here. Have we done any kind of independent analysis of what these four items would cost?
Everything except burying the utility lines.
So what is the cost to provide the bike facilities on both sides of Walnut Street?
Oh, I don't know if I have the backup in front of me. I wanted $50,000 to $100,000.
And is that an independent verification, or is that relying on what the petitioner is telling us?
It's been, we consulted our Director of Transportation.
Okay. So your memory is $50,000 to $100,000. What about installing the bike sharing station?
So we were saying up to $120,000.
A bike sharing station would cost $820,000?
So up to $120,000.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right, so we have $50,000 to $100,000, another approximately $120,000. The third item?
So this is where I wish I had my backup with me. I don't remember.
And do we have any idea what the burying the utilities would cost?
That's the most significant number on this list.
Mr. Chair, I think the petitioner has an idea, so you might want to ask them.
I will, and I'm certainly comfortable with the petitioner's idea, but I really think it's imperative that we do our own verification, because they're proposing to do certain things. We're relying on our own cost estimate as to what we want to do or not do. I mean, the utility lines, for example, if there's a $100,000 item, a $50,000 item, a $500,000 item, that makes a big difference to me, at least, in the calculus. But let's hear from Attorney Bookbinder. Do you have rough numbers on these four items? Mr. Clark, to you?
Yes, we got an estimate in from the utility company some time back, and it was in the $250,000 range.
Approximately.
I think it was like 217 with contingency. So. You know.
And they would do the work, is that correct? And then bill us, or we do the work?
The petitioner is willing to do all this work up to a cost of $700,000.
No, but the actual work, well, you're not doing the work yourself, are you, or would you?
No.
Undergrounding the utilities?
We would commission the work, and it would be our responsibility to make payment as how I would think it would work.
And then, I'm sorry, Councilor Arkoff, let me just hold it for a second. So that was about 200 some odd thousand. The streetscape improvements, what are we talking about there?
I can't give you a solid estimate on that, but in our conceptual bids, it's kind of all baked in. You know, we'd have to go back and bifurcate out, you know, one side of the street from the other. That's probably the one item that I would really recommend. It should be one
contractor or one entity conducting the work on each side of the street, it would be very disjointed to try to do that.
Oh, I don't disagree, but I want to know what we're getting here. In other words, what's the cost of that work? Because you're offering to do the work or give us $700,000, I think we all know what the cost is.
David, did we ever get a breakout on that, one side from the other?
Mr. Chair, while they're talking, I think, could you ask Mr. Corf if this is only, that price was only for Eversource?
You can go ahead.
Because all the other utilities have to bury the wire, have to bury their own wires. Mr. Corf, could you get a price from, besides Eversource, which came to the public facility, did you get a price from the other utilities?
I have David behind me here backing me up, but I believe it was combined.
So that stretches Washington Street from Washington Terrace across the front of our site. It is only Eversource and Newton Fire Alarm that are on those poles.
Okay, there's no Verizon, no thing. Okay, that's good.
Okay. So do you have the numbers for the streetscape or not?
Yeah, it's going to be in the 150 to 200 range is my estimate.
So it's 200 and then another 150 is 350 and the bike sharing station is another 100, that's 4-something. And then the bike facilities are another 100,000, that's 500, right?
Well, just running through this, it was 100 on number one, 120.
Okay, that's 220.
And call it 200, that's 420 and 250, you know, 670. Perhaps we round it up to 700, but...
How much is the streetscape improvements again?
I just quoted you some of 200 rings. Yeah, 150 to 200. We'd rather write the check for the 7. We're not trying to make money on it.
No, I understand it, but we're charged with understanding which one we should do. I don't think anyone's going to quibble over, you know, a couple thousand dollars one way or the other, but I think we need to make an informed decision. That's all.
Sure.
Rock and Cross, and then Crosley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have a little bit of homework to do before the next hearing. About 6 months ago, on behalf of the Newtonville Area Council, I sent a prioritized list of community benefits to the planning department, which does not align with these. Doesn't mean that they're worse or better than these. I think a potentially good approach is that we take 6 or 7 of these, try to get rough cost estimates, spend some time in between now and the hearing at the end of May, with the Newtonville Area Council, and constituents more broadly in Ward 2 to try to get a sense of priority based on the cost and the benefit, and then come back here for the next hearing at the end of May and try to hammer it out. I don't think we're ready to do it right now.
I agree with that. Councillor Crosley, you're nodding your head.
Add a little bit to that. I think in addition, we'd like to know, particularly on several of the items, what it would cost for the city to do it versus the developer to do it. It's sometimes cheaper not to do something through a public bidding process. For example, if they can wrap it into the project. But the opposite might be true in terms of the street improvements while we're working in Newtonville anyway. So we could do a cost comparison as part of that homework, I think.
Sure.
That's right.
Ms. Renard, does that make sense? Or Mr. You may not be the person doing it, Mr. Cronin or Mr. Heath?
I think we can easily get rough costs from the city to complete this work. The one other thing I think we should consider is prioritizing items 1, 2, and 3 to get done before number 4 gets done. The way that this is written, the last sentence in the first paragraph says that the petitioner has agreed to construct these improvements even if the cost exceeds $700,000, but we may want to prioritize.
Well, I want to hear some thought from the planning department as to what the Newtonville Area Council, or for that matter, others have proposed for improvements. I may put bike facilities number 10 on the list. I mean, bike facilities are great, but if there's a streetscape improvement, that may benefit more people. Again, I'm not prejudging. It's not my decision. It's the will of the committee. But I think we need to understand the alternatives. We need to have some recommendations. And I think you are going to have to coordinate, as Councillor Crosley suggested, with Public Works to get their sense. All right. Anything else here, folks, or are we going to table this one to the 30th? Councilor Auchincloss?
Close the loop on it. I mean, I'm happy to take ownership of making sure, Ms. Anand, that you have the Newtonville Area Council recommendations in front of you so that we can compile a complete list. It would be helpful if we can get the costs back maybe with 2 weeks to go before the next hearing, maybe within 2 weeks of tonight, because that way we have some time to deliberate with all the information.
I think that'd be great. And it does, look, it doesn't have to be the last dollar. We understand these are estimates, but we need to have some sense of what we're talking about. I'd like a better estimate on the bike stuff than 50 or 100,000 that, you know, someone should be able to pin that down a little bit more accurately. Okay? All right. Anything else? Okay. Next schedule.
Schedule E is the Transportation Demand Management Subsidy Program. So this talks about how the $300,000 will be spent among the tenants in the development. And it is prioritized based on lack of cars. I don't know how to put it in a not a negative way. You're rewarded with a greater subsidy if you have zero cars versus a family that has one or two cars. So it's a tiered system. It's also weighted so that affordable units get a higher percentage than the market rate units of the subsidy. And basically the way it works is once a tenant would buy a pass, they submit it to the building management, their receipts, and then will be reimbursed either through a rent deduction.
So how long is this subsidy going to last?
They have estimated that it will likely last at least 3 years, potentially 3 to 5 years.
So I'm going to put something out for my colleagues. Are we better off, colleagues, getting some kind of, using the $300,000? I presume the petitioner doesn't really care what he do. But it's $300,000 is $300,000. I'm wondering if we're better off taking those same kinds of funds and using them for some kind of permanent improvement in the Newtonville area rather than having a short-term subsidy for various transport options, which is by definition going away in 3 years. And in my view, it's not tied to people's income at all. I put that out there, colleagues, and I open it for discussion. Hold on, Councillor Norton. I know you're vocal on this. Councillor Cody first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the way I view this is it's a three-year deal at this point, but I think it would go towards building habits and possibly the type of clientele they would attract for apartment renters and such. So if we took the $300,000 and put it into some other project, I mean, we need like $13 million for a train station, so that's going to be a little piece of it. So that wouldn't really affect that, but I think if we go along with this plan here to subsidize and get the T-passes and encourage one car, whatever, I think that could work towards building the habits that we would try to desire. And then 3 years, maybe it's already done its job at that point.
Okay. Councillor Norton?
I think Councillor Cody captured it very well. One of the only things that I'm really excited about in this project is this piece about the behavior change. And this is what we need to be getting a lot more people to do. So I think the creative thinking that they've done here and putting their money behind it is a great experiment that we can see if it works elsewhere. We talk about transit-oriented development. We talk about getting people out of the cars. And then we approve massive underground parking garages that send the exact opposite message. So to me, this is a really important piece of the board order.
I may be a minority of one on this, which is perfectly fine with me, but go ahead, Councilor Albright.
The only thing I would add is that I know that Representative Kahn is meeting with Secretary Pollack either later this week or next week about the three stations, and I reserve judgment. This could be something taken up on May 30th if something changes, if something important is learned.
Anybody else comments on any of this? Just so we're clear, unless something changes, is it the will of the committee that we keep it as is and they're comfortable with the subsidy like this? I'm seeing a nod of heads. All right. I'll continue to express my reservation. I personally don't think this is the best use of our funds, but certainly going to defer to my colleagues. Go ahead, Councilor Auchincloss.
I'm on the fence about it, Mr. Chair. I would appreciate the input of the Director of Transportation. I respect her judgment. It would be interesting to hear what Ms. Friedman had to say about that.
Did she have some opinion on this?
She's carefully reviewed these plans and is thrilled about this program.
And if we gave her the $300,000 to improve bicycle facilities in the area, would she feel differently?
No, I don't think so.
Could you, between now and the 30th, speak to her about that?
Sure.
I mean, I think that's... I'm just trying to publicly have a discussion about the trade-off. That's all. And again, if it's the will of the committee, so be it. We probably want to take Bridge out of there. I hear they're not going to be in business much longer. But besides that. Okay. Anything else on this that we need to talk about? Do we need to talk about the specifics of the subsidy? Are people comfortable with it? I'm seeing no commentary. I think you have a comfort level with the proposal. Are you comfortable with it as planners?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, please. Do you want to go to the next schedule?
Schedule F is the Transportation Demand Management Plan, which talks about how they will reach the reduced dependency on cars. They're going to be posting information about transit services, where they go, the schedules. They will have bicycle accommodations, 30 above ground spaces, as well as a number of a room in the garage of covered bike room for tenants. Improvements to the streetscape for pedestrians. Talks about the subsidy management plan program.
Can we scroll down so we can follow you, please?
And then finally, it talks about a monitoring and reporting plan so that they would meet with the city director of transportation and give us feedback on how the transportation demand management plan is working.
So I'm going to go back to the beginning, if we could.
Sure.
Let me pose a very practical issue for my colleagues. We impose lots of conditions and special permits, which talk about all sorts of laudable goals. Who's going to enforce that? I think that's the critical question here, folks. I think it's great to put this in here, but who is going to enforce that there's a specific person on the Washington Place staff in 4 years or 6 years charged with this mission? This is not doubting the bona fides of the petitioner, but we're putting in a special permit. So, Councilor Clausen.
Well, that's an interesting question, but I'm more interested in learning from it than enforcing it, and it's in dovetailing with our interest in hearing from Nicole Friedman. In fact, I was already thinking it might be nice to have something written from her that's her kind of assessment of this program, and then I think we all could use an education with respect to this stuff because that's new to me, too. New to many of us, so maybe she could propose a way to, or what she would like to hear about this program in its implementation in the first year, in the second year, in the third year, and perhaps that means there's some kind of a reporting mechanism that could go to the Director of Transportation to understand how well this is working.
Councilor Norton.
Signs in elevators. Letting people know, letting residents know about this benefit in English and Spanish.
Okay, but right now I want to focus on the order. First, the first piece of the order says we're going to have a specific person on staff who's going to do this various work, and I'd like to know how we're going to enforce that. Not just the first year. I don't doubt the first year they're going to put them in there, but then maybe somebody else.
Each year.
How are we going to enforce that? Who's going to check on this?
So I don't think that we need that. This is, I think you're asking a very good question, and if we don't have an answer this second, I think that's okay. We can. But certainly asking the petitioner to require a plan would be one idea. It's a good question, but I think that's definitely solvable.
Go ahead, Ms. Anand.
So the plan calls for an annual meeting with the City of Newton traffic engineer. So that is one requirement.
So are you going to, Mr. Heath, are you going to have your staff call it? The traffic engineer doesn't work for you, does it? It does not. DPW. So who's going to calendar? I mean, I'm just trying to think very practical stuff, folks, okay? We write these lovely board orders, and then we end up 5 or 10 years later, and we don't have these meetings. So who's going to be calendaring this meeting every year?
So I would propose that this be monitored just like we monitor the affordable housing consistency. So we'd do that on an annual basis. We'd put it on the petitioner to provide us with the information that we need to assess that what was in the special permit is being met.
But there's supposed to be, I appreciate that, but here we're saying you're going to have a meeting every year. Who's going to initiate the meeting?
So the Director of Transportation would probably initiate the meeting on this.
Councilor Cody?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really have to agree with you on this one because this is kind of like government speak here. We're laying something out, and then, like, who does it? There is no answer up there. There's nothing listed. Maybe they use the leaf blower police or something when they're bored. But, yeah.
We're not going to talk about leaf blowers in this.
No, I'm just saying, but I agree with you that there's not a substance in there that actually.
One thing we could do, which would be similar to the accessible apartments, where homeowners have to submit an annual letter certifying that it's owner-occupied, blah, blah, blah. We can put in here a condition that the petitioner certify on an annual basis that the TDM is in place and they are monitoring the conditions.
But this is I'm pushing back to it. It's a little bit different. This is, I think what we're trying to get at here is a very active transportation demand management strategy. And it will be critical to do it in the first year or two. But we want this to be ongoing. It's an ongoing condition. So, Councilor Crossley.
So, in the transportation subsidy program, section 8, there's a monitoring and reporting plan. It seems pretty clear to me what they're proposing, that there is a tracking mechanism and there's an annual reporting. We just include that as a condition to the Director of Transportation, just like we do other things on an annual basis that we require it as part of the special permit. I'm not sure exactly what else you're asking for.
I'm asking a very practical question because as we have found during some of our deliberations, the Land Use Committee, that and even with accessory apartments, that we were not tracking accessory apartment filings previously. We are now hopefully going to be doing that, but we had an issue with that, and I think we have other issues with Inspectional Service and others, simply not, it's a complaint-driven system. That's what we've been told. So this complaint-driven system, that concerns me when we have kind of proactive things we're asking for. Councilor Norton.
I think that in this case, a complaint-driven system works because if you advertise it everywhere that residents are, and you have a very contained universe of people here, it's not like the whole city, then, and it's a money benefit, you're making it very clear you get this, and then maybe there could be if you have trouble accessing this and you think you're eligible, call this number. I would be comfortable with that.
The problem is that the subsidy ends in 3 years. This is supposed to last forever. This transportation demand management plan is supposed to last well beyond the 3 years. Is that my understanding? It's a lifetime plan.
Yeah, I don't know that it would be after that. Because what would there be to coordinate?
An annual basis of the continuing efforts. Every 2 years, we're going to conduct a survey. I mean, if we only have money for 3 years, this is meaningless language. So either this is, as I think the intent is, this lasts for the life of the project. This goes well beyond the subsidy.
And maybe it could be even reassessed after 3 years, you know. But I understood there would only be a need for this when there's the subsidy.
Yeah, that was my understanding as well, Mr. Chair. I think this was written perhaps before they calculated it was only the last 3 years.
Yeah, then this needs to be rewritten completely, because if it's a 3-year subsidy, why are we putting in things like every 2 years we have to conduct a survey?
Mr. Chair, you know, often in transportation demand management plans, we have things about encouraging employees to use public transportation. I don't know, I don't think that's in here. Those are the kinds of things that could also be in here, not just about the residents.
So let's be clear as a committee. I'll take it from non-committee members as well. Are we advocating for a transportation demand management plan that goes beyond the subsidy? Is that what we're talking about, or are we just talking about it for the 3-year period? 3-year period only.
Typically, it goes beyond. Typically, it goes into the future.
Councillor Cody?
I go along with Councillor Albright on that one, because if we're going to implement this, and this is a project that's designed to be transit-oriented in some fashion, to say it's only going to last 3 years and then that's it, then we're being disingenuous to the community. We actually have to make this last on much further.
My understanding is that this there are parts that are 3 years, and there are parts that go on forever. And the parts that go on forever, I think, we're looking at right up here, the 2 years. The periodically, the coordinator should be available to the city at any time to discuss issues. I understand your worry about this, but this is not our typical development, and I think that with the changes in transportation and combining with larger projects, I think this is exactly what we should be doing. And instead of wondering how we're going to enforce it, I think this is a great step forward as to a plan that we can enforce, and that our transportation director needs to pay more attention to these types of developments because they generate more traffic. So I think we should go with this and work with this.
My quarrel is not with the plan. I think you're right. My concern is, as we're writing this, I want to know that it's manageable from staff side, that they're going to be able to follow up on this in a reasonable fashion. I don't want to write something that just doesn't get enforced. Councillor Crosley?
So I think the key points have been made here, and I really think we ought to be waiting till the next meeting.
Fine.
And request a summary assessment from our transportation director / planning department. I don't know whether she can be here or not, but if not, she could write something to us and assess the entirety of this in her own words and make recommendations to us about how it should be presented in the board order.
Fair enough. Why don't we do this? Let's move on. But I want to scroll down. Let's just, is there anything of particular, hold on, let's not go that quick. Is there anything in any of these subsets that we are concerned about that we want to address, or do we want to just wait to hear from our transportation director? Councillor Auchincloss, anything else? Yes, Councillor Norton?
I'd be interested to know if the petitioner would build more conduit for additional charging stations, because over time more people will be charging than just the one, especially in the residential area.
My guess is they'll have a self-interest in doing it, frankly, but be interested to hear what they have to say.
The answer is yes. We started with a certain number, and if there's a need for it, we contemplated adding some.
You have the ability to expand it if need be. Is that the bottom line? Okay. Does that help, Councillor Martin? Okay. Anything else from this piece, folks? Is there not anything else you want to point out to us in particular? So the subsidy programs are something we dealt with in the previous appendix as well. Is it the same? Okay.
I'll leave it to drafting whether we want to, whether we need to repeat the same thing or not. Maybe we could just reference it. Okay? Probably better for accuracy. Alright. Anything else from the other stuff, folks? Alright. Let's move on.
Schedule G lays out the Walnut and Washington Street intersection improvements. So these are the improvements that the petitioner is committing to, separate and distinct from the $700,000. So this is the new signal, the curb bump out, the ADA crosswalks.
Are we paying for it? Are we doing this work, or are they doing this work?
The petitioner is doing this work.
If I might, Councillor, I talked with the petitioner's attorney today, and we want to work this up a little more fully because I think there's a question of how the completion of the improvements at the intersection will coincide with the phasing of the project, particularly given that those improvements may come up at a time when you can't make improvements for the due to weather conditions. You've got some of them made, but not all of them. So we want to have a much more robust statement, not only of what the scope is, because there's concern that the scope might creep at some point, have an obligation that the petitioner work with the city as those designs are being developed and going in from schematic into final, and then also figure out a little phasing. So we need to make this a more robust.
I'd also just add as an observation, for example, you look at number one, replacing existing signalization with a modern traffic light. That's just not the level of specificity that it's not fair to the petitioner. Your interpretation of modern might be different than ours. We ought to be clear as to what we're getting or not getting. Any other issues on that, folks? I just think we have to be specific here. I think that really runs through a lot of the materials here. So by the 30th, is that fair, Ms. Young? Is that doable?
Right now, what we'd like to be able to do, if possible, is try to get a draft pulled together by the 19th of May. I mean, we'll do our best to do that because I'd like to have this out for the board and the public to consider for a week in advance of May 30th. I don't want to spring this on people on May 30th.
No, I agree. I understand. Questions, Councilor Albright?
Well, I know next winter, Mr. Heath, the Washington Street redesign will begin, right? Next fall, winter?
So the design will be completed the end of this year, potentially, for the spring at the earliest?
Right, so I think some mention ought to be in here about coordinating the Washington Street aspect with the city's Washington Street redesign from West Newton to West Newton Corner. The same time frame, and it's got to work together.
Yeah. We can put something to that effect. We're going to have DPW look at this with us.
Thank you.
Good. Anything else from this, folks? All right, so we're going to have a more robust G then. Next, please.
Schedule H is the inclusionary housing plan. This talks about consistency with the city's inclusionary zoning ordinance. It also talks about the middle income piece of the project.
Maybe we can break this up into two pieces, folks. The inclusionary zoning piece, the 15%, I presume is pretty standard stuff. You know how to do the calculations. There's really not going to be much debate about it. I think we should be having some discussion, colleagues, about this 10% for so-called workforce and middle-income housing. And I'll chew the discussion up. I recognize that we have a situation in the city where we're developing really two stratas of housing that may be considered really extraordinarily expensive for anybody in a so-called middle-income area, and then not enough, but some affordable housing, at least for folks at a much lower end of the stratum. The question I think we have to consider is, do we take the money, the subsidy that they're offering here, because it's real dollars, and do we apply it to people at the 80% level, people at the 50% level, or do we use it for this so-called workforce housing? I think it's a really large public policy decision. I know the developer is excited about this piece, but I think, Mr. Corp and Attorney Bookbinder, I recognize at the end of the day, it's dollars for you, and if we trade it off one or the other, there's some ratio, but they're still dollars. Is that a fair statement?
It would depend on the exact percentages.
Of course.
In other words, you know, 10% middle income equals X percent of additional 50 to 80.
I'm not holding you to a number, but I just
wouldn't be able to quote that number this evening is my point.
Pardon?
I wouldn't be able to give you what that percentage is.
No, I'm not asking you to do so. I'm just noting for the record that there is a correlation, that there's some increase from the, whether it's 50% or 80% that you could do if you did not have the 10% workforce housing.
Okay. Affordable housing as a whole is very quantifiable.
Understood. Okay. So with that, let me tee up the discussion. Councilor Auchincloss, did you want to say something? No? Councilor Albright.
Well, maybe the planning department can help me out because I don't have all the data in my head, but I know that the demographic studies of Newton are showing that we're losing people 25 to 45. That's a drop, isn't that the drop-in group? Because they can't afford to be here. So we're losing middle-income people of a large age group, and they're finding less and less places to live in the city. And that's the reason why the affordable housing was proposed, was to create not only the diversity for the lower income, but for a middle income. It's also, the point is made in that demographic study that we need that age group because economically, the people who want to hire people in this area, they need a place to live near their work. And so it's not just a good thing to do, but it's an economically sound thing to do.
So I challenge that a little bit, Councilor Albright. Certainly, the idea that if we're losing the cohort from 40 to 45 or 35 to 45, but I think we have a shifting demographic among our mid and late 20s folks where, frankly, they are getting married later or choosing life partners later. They're buying their homes later. They're continuing their education later. And so we have perhaps a different demographic than, now I sound old and I hate to do that.
I have personal knowledge of all of that.
I do too. my 26-year-old is not at all interested in living in suburbia at this point in his life. His parents were in a different place. And I would very much hesitate to draw on one's personal experience to make broad judgments. But at the same time, I want to be very careful about the types of analyses we do here because I think there's a lot of factors at play.
Can I just add one more thing? I've done a lot of reading on this topic. And, while anecdotal stories are very informative sometimes, if you look at the data that's been collected and researched, it shows that millennials do want to live in rental housing closer to jobs and on transit. And they are interested in looking at Newton kinds of places, and that's what the research is showing.
Councilor Crosley, and then Norton.
So I think Susan has more facts and figures at her fingertips than certainly the planning department does, and I'm not good at reciting those off the cuff. But it's certainly clear to me that these trends have been going on for a very long time. We've been seeing some of us refer to as gap housing, the gap is expanding, pretty exponentially over, say, 30 years, where increasingly folks in the middle have not been able to find something in communities like Newton. That's a big reason, I think, nationally, why you're seeing young people wait much longer to start their families, to you know, think about having a house and children and so forth in a more suburban community. It's also true that young people enjoy living in the city, and that we're hoping, a lot of us are hoping actually for, you know, folks, and it has been happening, to move back into the city. You know, denser housing is better when you have lots of people to, instead of spreading out all over the place. But, you know, this is a relatively small and certainly a very first step in an experiment here in our community in Newton, where our housing and land prices are out of sight. And, you know, I'm very concerned about the changing demographic in our city, that we're losing people in certain age brackets at a fast clip. And, you know, who are the folks going to be who are going to take over from us if there's no opportunity for housing? Housing is the great equalizer. You know, young people aren't making starting incomes by and large that enable them to have a shot at living in a place like Newton. So, I want to admit to not knowing if this is the, you know, to what degree is this going to be a solution and for whom. But it's a small step, and I think we ought to be doing we ought to be taking a tiny chance here, and I think it's progressive and thoughtful, and it's going to give some number of people a shot. I'd like to find out who they are.
I guess I'll differ in this. It seems to me we're providing essentially a form of subsidy, a government-type subsidy in one way or the other here, government direct or indirect. I personally think if we're going to subsidize folks, we ought to be doing it at the people who are the most in need. That's where we ought to be directing our money first. And really, frankly, what's a middle-class subsidy concerns me. It takes us down. I understand the goal of trying to increase the diversity in the city. It's a laudable goal, but if I'm going to be expending public funds or directing public funds, I really want them to go to the people who are most in need, who really have very few other alternatives but for these types of programs. That's my view. Again, as with many other things, if my colleagues are perfectly happy with this, I don't want to prolong a debate. But I think they're laudable goals, but I think the money could be better spent for other laudable goals. Anybody else want to speak, Councillor Norton?
I like to be evidence-based in approaching this type of question, and I would just remind my colleagues that the petitioner included a report in our packet probably a year ago at this point by RKG Associates, which found that we actually have a surplus of housing units in the city at the 50% to 120% AMI level. So again, I asked this at the last time, I think I've asked this twice now, I don't understand why we are so focused on that level when the need from the actual analysis done of our own city is at the under 50%. And as I recall from the last meeting, we had a discussion about what level of affordability we would need to require in order to have all of the units in the development count on the SHI. Was it 20% of?
20% at 50% or 25% at below 80%.
So why not go for 20% at 50% AMI or less?
So if there's a way to say everybody's been right in the comments, so there's an ocean of need for housing at all levels. The levels that we're talking about on page 4 show the income guidelines for the 80 to 120%. So people would be hard-pressed at the income shown there by family size to find units in Newton that are affordable at those levels. So there's a big need at all levels, both at the lower income level, for sure. There's a lot of folks there. But there's also folks at the middle income level that have no options in Newton. I think this is an attempt to address those needs as well as the low income needs.
Right, but since we can't help everyone and give everyone a space in Newton that might want it, why I think we would want to prioritize the lower income.
This is a phenomenon that is not unique to Newton. We're seeing this in Boston and Cambridge and Somerville, where they're carving out units to provide for some middle income housing as well, because they're recognizing that they're losing that population as well. And it's a kind of an important part of your community to preserve as well.
Right, again, and as I've commented before, where I live, there are more of those units that are affordable for the 50 to 120%. There's much less under 50%. So, again, I would encourage us to emphasize that level.
The key here is that these units are in perpetuity. They're always going to be available at that income level.
And
so the naturally affordable units may be available today, but not tomorrow.
Well, one at a time. Let Mr. Hughes finish. Yeah.
Right, and then units that are not in brand new housing until someone tears it down and rebuilds it, they're also going to be affordable. I've mentioned before my neighbor in a three-bedroom paying $2,100 a month. This is my neighbor. And until that house is torn down, there's not going to be the justification to charge more for it.
I just add, again, it's a philosophical issue for me. I just don't think we as government ought to be in the business of doing middle-class subsidies. I think we have an obligation, I think, to start off with our poorest, most vulnerable residents and citizens, and I think that's where we ought to be focusing our efforts. Go ahead.
Well, I think Mr. Heath said it well, which is there is an ocean of need, and whatever spectrum that we build the housing for, it's going to get rented out, and it's going to be rented out to people who truly need it. It's a question of are there broader social goals to having a spectrum of income diversity as opposed to making it increasingly binary, where we have this bifurcation between the very well-off and the not-so-well-off. I happen to think that there is a broader social goal to having that spectrum, and you point out, Councilor Ritter, that you have this philosophical objection to middle-class subsidies. We deal with home ownership. The mortgage tax interest rate deduction is one giant federal subsidy to the middle class, which I'm sure many of us here have enjoyed. So it's because there are broader social benefits to home ownership, I would say there are broader social benefits to having a mix of incomes all throughout the range. And for that reason, I would support that 10%. As Councillor Crossley said, do we know it's going to be the right course of action? We don't know it, but I think it's an important experiment.
Fair enough. Okay, Councillor Albright, and then I'll take anybody else who wants to comment, but I'm going to get a will of the committee because if I'm the lone voice, I don't want to delay this. Go ahead.
I would just add what I know Councillor Ciccone would want to add if he were here, and this is from the article that I sent you, Councillor Moreto, some time ago. This little bit, the middle class includes teachers, firefighters, police officers, and other community members who play a vital role in strengthening our city, building our economy, and supporting our hardworking. This happened to be about New York. So, and as Councillor Ciccone has told us, they're just above that limit.
A very fair observation. I think it's fair to say these are very difficult choices we're trying to make. I'm hearing my colleagues are comfortable with leaving this as is. Councilor Norton, you want to add one thing?
I don't recall if we had discussed how the program would be administered, because I thought the state doesn't do this level, the middle income level.
Could you shed some light on how you anticipate administering this, Mr. Heath?
So we would have whoever the agent is that would conduct the lottery for the affordable units to also do the middle income. We would be part of that as well. It makes sense to do it all at one time.
Okay. And you'd solicit notices to folks that they could be eligible? All the stuff you do, I follow
the same process.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Councilor Norton? Okay. Anybody else? I'm sensing a will of the committee that we leave it as is. Is that an accurate statement? Okay. Fine. All right, we'll leave it as is. Let's go on.
So the last schedule is Schedule I, and this lays out the sustainability narrative of the project. So this talks directly about how the project is meeting the fifth special permit criteria, and this just puts it in writing of what we will be expecting.
Can I say, I guess the question is, why are we including something that's presented by the developer as part of our special permit?
So these are the conditions that they will be held to. They're making this commitment.
Are these, I'm just asking, are these conditions or what is it? I mean, I'm reading the sustainability. This is what they say they're doing, but what are we asking them to actually do?
So this lays out how the building will be making the other meeting the other criteria that they've committed to, which is a LEED gold level sustainable building at the, I can't remember which rating, but
gold certification.
Yeah, but is it for new development or there's like a special
Councilor Ripoff? If you would.
We ask for a certain level. They're willing to do the LEED certification. What level is it? Gold or gold? So we ask them to do that. We put it in the board order. They hire their people to spell out exactly what they're going to do, and I think
read the first paragraph. What does that tell us what they're going to do? Actually do. I don't see anything about what they're going to do in that first paragraph. And again, I get...
So the first paragraph focuses on design, yeah. But the next section focuses on the building envelope, and that's where they talk about
car
value, windows, insulation,
yeah.
Roof assembly.
My personal preference is much more to state the building shall have, okay? I think this is an order that we're issuing. What do we want? I have no problem with taking some of the language in here that they're suggesting they're going to do, but I think we owe it to ourselves to write what we expect rather than just adopt verbiage from what is a, you know, somewhat of a, I don't want to say puffy, that's not a fair statement, but a statement of a vision. I don't think that's what we want.
Condition 19 is the condition associated with this schedule, and that's where we say the building shall achieve LEED Gold for homes for mid-rise version 3 certification.
So why do we need this then? I don't think we do.
We don't need it.
I mean, what I would urge us to do is go through here, and if there's something specific that they're going to do, let's incorporate it in the board order. Okay.
No, I was just going to comment the same direction on that, because if this is a cover letter to a package that has more detail, then that's fine. But this is just, if this is the detail we're getting, then that wouldn't be sufficient.
All right. Is that our last schedule, Ms. Anand?
Yes.
All right. So thank you very much for taking us through this. So is it worthwhile that this, we have two options, quarter or nine. Is there anything else you think we can accomplish this evening or you want to go back to in terms of the draft board order? Or should we use the next, you know, hour or so and take public comment? Colleagues, do you have any? I think I'll opt for public comment, but if there's some substantive decision that we've postponed, I'd like to at least have conversation. Are you good?
I think Weed and I believe that we're good on the board order for now. We know that there's still work to be done that we'll be working on.
Yeah, I get it. I'll just say this publicly yet again, but this has been an extraordinarily difficult task, and I think I know Ms. Anand and you, Ms. Young, working with others have put a tremendous amount of time in crafting something that's really hard, and I think you've done a really great job doing it. I think we're pretty much on the home stretch here. There's a few places we have some substantive discussion, colleagues, particularly in how we spend that $700,000. But I think other than that, we've covered the critical points. Anybody have any questions for Ms. Anant or Ms. Young? All right. With that, it's 9:15. We're going to take public comment. Can I have a show of hands of anybody who wishes to speak this evening? Lots of folks. Okay. Why don't we start with the front of the room here, and we'll work backwards, okay? Come on up, please. And just as a reminder, I know most of you have spoken previously, please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. I have told Mr. Arnstein he has a group of several people, and I've given him a total of 15 minutes for that group, with the understanding that they were representative of a bunch of other folks. And just state your name and address, and really do help us if you could. The zone change and the board order are really the critical changes that we've made, so if you could, try not to repeat yourself, but the zone change and the board order in particular, your comments would be especially welcome. Good evening.
Thank you for letting us speak at this public hearing. I'm Kathleen Carell Grazer, 258 Mill Street in Newtonville. As elected officials, you each took an oath of office in which you swore to uphold the laws of the Commonwealth. One of those laws is Chapter 48, Section 5, which allows abutters to protest a proposed zoning change and secure a higher threshold of votes needed to approve such change. The abutters to Mr. Korff's proposed project have followed the law, submitted a successful petition, and deserve the protection Massachusetts law affords them. It should be inconceivable to each and every one of you to even consider reneging on your oath of office and casting aside the law you have sworn to uphold, the law we elected you to uphold. Even those of you who would have supported this overreaching proposal despite its negative impacts on Newton's commercial tax base, fiscal health, debt, and quality of life, surely cannot support this cynical attempt to circumvent the law you are sworn to uphold. In my opinion, there's nothing to do but vote no to the rezoning and no to the special permit. To reward Mr. Korff for his Machiavellian scheming will ensure years of litigation, more inflating of housing prices by incentivizing property speculation, more devil strip proposals from other speculators, a more dysfunctional municipality, and a more distressed citizenry. Mr. Korff simply must return to the negotiating table with the neighbors and come up with a project within existing zoning that works for him, the neighbors, and for all of us. Moreover, your constituents elected you to safeguard our interests and our community from bad planning, predatory speculators, and disastrous fiscal imbalances. You have a fiduciary responsibility to reject a spot rezoning that will convert some of Newton's small and precious commercial tax base to a primarily residential use. In a community facing more than $1 billion in debt, and for which 3 mayoral candidates have said publicly more overrides are coming, how could you in good conscience vote for a project that will push Newton further into debt? Additional residential developments cost more in city services than they yield in tax revenue. The higher the density, the worse the fiscal impact. Approving this project is evidence of a kind of fiscal magical thinking, insanity, or worse. NU4 may have been a well-intentioned mistake, but it was a mistake nonetheless. I urge you to repeal it before it cannibalizes what little remains of our insufficient commercial tax base. Newton's spending habits are unsustainable. This project is fiscally unsustainable. It's not rational, practical, or ethical to approve the rezoning or the special permit. And I just want to say there are two things that are really bad about this. If you fail to secure 100% of units counting on the SHI, you're throwing money down the drain. You're throwing away your control over our local land use, and we count on you to protect that. There's no reason for this bogus workforce housing. You can get 20% at 50% AMI. You can get 100% of units to count. That's what you should do. And the other thing I hope you won't throw away is the publicly zoned land in this project on Bailey Place. Whatever you do, however you reconfigure this, the public use zone land, that amount must remain constant or increase over time, or you're putting our 1.5% and your control over local land use decision making at risk. Please don't do that, and please vote no against this. Please. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Come on up. Good evening.
Hi, Julia Malachy, 59 Road, West Newton. I won't repeat the letter I sent you all earlier today. I basically agree with everything Kathleen said. I just the whole point of this state law is to protect the abutters' interests. It's a meaningless law if it's allowed to be circumvented by the narrowest or whatever size strip to essentially let an applicant be their own abutter and render the real abutters irrelevant. I can't believe a state court ultimately would uphold that type of treatment, rendering the law meaningless. So if I were you, if I were in your place, I would be absolutely embarrassed to be going along with that type of maneuver. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. I'm just going to move back. Second row, third row. Mr. Harrington, would you like to step up? Good evening, sir. Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Planning Board, members of the Land Use Committee. I'm speaking for Neighbors for Better Newtonville, and I'll take up some of their time. First, I have...
Part of it, is this part of Mr. Arnstein's group? Go ahead.
I have a gift for some of you. You can have them all, I guess. We have a shadow study that was done based on using information about the sunrise and the angle, and I think I gave away my copy. Anyway, with respect to the shadow, I just want to point out that on a 60-foot building will cast a shadow into some portion of the abutter's backyard from October 17th to February 25th each year. That's more than a third of a year of that intrusion. On November 15th, the shadow cast will be 107 feet at noon. It'll be 200 feet at 9 a.m. and 204 feet at 3 p.m. On December 15th, the shadow cast will be 132 feet at noon, 303 feet at 9 o'clock, 247 feet. The information is in there, and you can go through it. I've got the months of November, December, January, and February. The shadow study that you saw shows no evidence of this shadow being cast. I would ask you to check with your planning department. I understand that the city of Newton is going to spend, I'm not sure if it's $30 million or more, on improvements to Walnut Street from the high school down to, I don't know, Foster Street or someplace down in that area. But they're going to narrow the streets, going to eliminate one of the, that middle lane, going to widen sidewalks and put in planters and do things like that. And I'm not sure that these narrower streets were taken into consideration when you got the report from the developer's traffic consultants. And it, my general life experience, I would say that narrowing those streets down to two lanes, narrowing Walnut Street down to two lanes is going to increase the traffic problems that you have up and down the street. Now, Robert Kraft spent $30 million to buy land assessed at $13 million. Either the assessors are way off on their ability to judge the value of land, or he overpaid dramatically for the land. And now he wants you to aid and abet his plan so that he can recover his money. This isn't a question that normally comes up, but if a man overpays for land on a speculation, then how much of that should you take into consideration? Every time the developer speaks about doing something, he says he can't afford it. Every time you ask about finances, I hear someone tell you, you're not supposed to look into the finances. I think that we have a little bit of a conflict, and you should take into consideration that
this big, almost $20 million overpayment had to be a very speculative guess. This project is 2 blocks long and 5 stories high. Counselors tell objectors that if it isn't passed, we're going to get a large 40B. But we never saw the 40B. I think you should reject that from your consideration, what might go there. I think that we have to look at the project and say, does this project suit what's going there? And maybe it does. But then again, maybe it doesn't. What does the ordinance say? The ordinance says that it should be compatible in visual scale to its surroundings, and it should not adversely affect its surroundings by creating shadows or blocking views. One of the reasons I gave you that shadow study is so that you might think that when the neighbors and other people say that it is going to cast shadows, that it's going to have a negative impact on the single and two-family homes that abut the property, that you can say, well, there is some evidence to that effect. But you can say, we are supposed to make a finding that it's compatible in visual scale. A 60-foot building is compatible to one and two-family homes. I just don't see that as being correct. And I ask you to look at this. It's not that the MU4 is a bad zone. The MU4 doesn't belong in this particular area. And I think it's zoned up to its maximum capacity at 3 and 4 stories. And I would add that in all the negotiations, I don't know whether you help or harm the neighbors, because the neighbors have been very close to a settlement with Cross. At least that's what I hear. And it seems to me that when Mr. Cross thinks that he might get something more from the board of, from the city council, he leaves the neighbors and comes to you. And when he thinks he can't get the vote from you, he leaves you and he goes back to the neighbors. And you're stuck, and the neighbors are stuck. And I suggest that if you just look at the project and say how big it is and does it belong there. I think Mr. Keith can tell you how much is going to be spent on Walnut Street, and I think that's something that you should give some consideration to. There are a number of other issues, but I would like to say that I disagree with Attorney Young. It might not be the first time, but on her interpretation. I think that in Massachusetts, that the courts would find it against public policy to allow for the creation of this strip. Now, if they created a lot and said it was a separate lot and was not part of the project, that would be one thing that they probably would win on. But what they've done is they've taken lots that go up to the abutters and then left out some land out of the zone. So the court's got to make the determination, if it touches the land that's being rezoned, it is the nearest land immediately adjacent to the lot that's being rezoned. And if that gives them the rights to file the protest petition, then we're back where we were when this was with the law.
Attorney Harrington, you're welcome to continue, but I've given Mr. Arnstein's group a total of 15 minutes. You've probably had more than half of it already.
Then I should finish up. I will send you a letter, because I don't expect to be here on May 30th, citing other points. But just briefly, the petition is asking for 38 adjustments to zoning, and 35 of them are waivers. I think there's something wrong with the zoning ordinance that requires 35 waivers on its second run out of the bond. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Arnstein, anyone else in your group who's going to speak tonight? Well,
if other people speak tonight,
All right. Let's continue to move backwards. Come on up, sir. And then we'll just continue to move back on this side of the room. Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the board of the Land Use and Planning Board. My name is Rick Hahn. I live in 29 Marlboro Street, Newton Corner. I have spoken before here, and I have submitted a letter to the council. I'm not sure that it's passed through the room, but you may have had it. I just have to saw cut short. I think the two things, two words are important for me. 160 and 20. 160 building units available to 2018-19. 20 units currently in a building that's built at the turn of the last century. I think there's a big difference for the residents and for the opportunities for the new people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else on this side of the room wish to be heard? Come on up. We'll just keep moving back. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Robert Smith. I'm one of the neighbors at 40 across the street in Newtonville. As has been mentioned, neighbors are in conversations with Mr. Corr, and I think those are proceeding, both sides, in good faith. Where they will lead, I don't know. But certainly we are looking for a smaller project than is currently being proposed. I want to just make a brief comment that in the meantime, while those are going on, we will be filing another protest. And I just want to clarify, I think there are two different issues here relating to the protest. There are legal issues, and when we do file the protest, we'll be submitting some legal arguments on the matter of whether we think, in fact, the redrawing of the line in fact is legally effective to defeat the protest. But also, obviously, from the point of view of the councillors, I think you have to decide whether this technical change in the project really does justify a different approach. And what I mean by that is, in response to the city council's reservations expressed at the meeting, and the counting of heads reached the conclusion that there was not enough votes to pass, rather than presenting a scaled-back version, we have the exact same proposal with a technical line drawing attempting to change the number of people who are required. We think that it's appropriate to have a smaller project if we're able to work that out through conversations and present something to the city, to the committee that the committee finds appropriate of city council. That would be great. We will see on the 30th where we stand at that point.
Thank you very much. And next, please come on up. Good evening.
Hello. My name is Ellen Sheehy. I live at 1253 Commonwealth Avenue. And I'm a supporter of this project. I've lived in Newton for 27 years, and I think I've seen dozens of times where we stand in the way of making Newton a more livable, more lively, more interesting place to live. I can tell you I've probably never frequented any business on that whole block. I lived in Newtonville on Cabot Street for 7 years, except the post office and the gas station. I think that you look at that building the way it is now, you look at the development on the other side of the post office, two-story, unremarkable, waste of space buildings, and I think we can do a lot better. We look at Newtonville, it's a dump. We look at a lot of our villages, and they can be a lot better. So I applaud the efforts. I encourage you to figure out a solution. I understand that there's a lot of citizen effort in opposing development in the city, and I hope that you guys can see your way forward to a yes in some way or another. Thank you.
Thank you very much, ma'am. On this side of the room, come on up, sir, and then there's someone behind. Come on up as well, please. Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Ed Daly. I live at 67 Maplewood Ave in Thompsonville. I testified twice before during this lengthy proceeding, so I would like to limit my comments just to that part of what you're considering this evening that has to do with inclusionary housing and affordable housing. When I first moved to Newton in 1978, I was appointed to the planning board by then Mayor Teddy Mann. And in the almost 40 years that I've lived here, I've had the sense that the overriding public good in land use issues in our city is indeed affordable housing. Accordingly, I urge you to adopt the zoning change and the board order as discussed tonight. That would maximize both the inclusionary housing and the affordable housing that you've discussed this evening. I've had the opportunity to have discussion with a number of city councilors about this matter over the last several months, and I recognize that some people agree with me, some people disagree with me, and some people, I'm not quite sure where they stand. I think all of the discussions I've had with people have been respectful. When there is a public good, there are trade-offs. I would suggest to you that the overriding public good here is the inclusionary housing and the affordable housing, and that that should be the basis on which the ultimate decision for approval is made. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please come on up. Anybody else from this side of the room? You'll be next, sir. Good evening.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for opening the floor this evening. My name is Tariq Lucas. I live at 36 Central Avenue in Newtonville. I think this new proposal is a blatant attempt to circumvent the spirit of the law. It is my amateur opinion that the law was put in place to protect the residents from rezoning petitions, not to give real estate developers a way to get their proposal approved. The fact that the city council, city legal department, and now the planning department are blind to this obvious disrespect for the law is embarrassing. The petitioner withdrew their previous proposal because they didn't have the votes. Why should they benefit from the law simply because they moved their rezoning back a couple of yards when the primary structures still remain in the same location? What's the difference for those, what is the difference for those abutters on Foster Street? They are still affected by the density and the size of the proposed structures. Once again, it just shows how out of place this proposal really is. I was against the previous proposal, and I'm against this current proposal. I would assume that this is the case for just about who is presently in this room. So what has changed? Oh yeah, that's right. The petitioner is trying to circumvent the law now. And for the record, Newtonville is not a dump. I lived there for the last 8 years. In the same one-bedroom apartment, and it costs a fraction of what the one-bedroom units will go for on Washington Place. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Come on up, please, sir. Anyone else on this side of the room, Mr. Blank? Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Adele Foz. I've lived on Page Road for the past 44 years. My view, and I wish people would remember, this is not an all or nothing. If the density is lower, there is still affordable housing. No one has disputed that. The real issue has been the problems associated with density. And the bigger the building, the more environmental problems, the more shadow problems, etc. I urge you to remember 3,000 people do not want this. The residents mainly of Newtonville, and in effect, this is simply a piece of gerrymandering, and it should be not, you should not allow this because you will set a very bad precedent. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Next, please. Mr. Blank. Good evening.
Good evening. Hi, thank you so much. I am here really to express my
name and address.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yep, Lynn LeBlanc, 43 Brookdale Road. I'm here really to express my frustration that this devil strip allows us or allows the developer to come in, and we residents have to come in and rehash this over and over again. And I was reminded all this week of Cicero, and his words kept echoing in my mind, O tempora, O mores. And I will continue. When, O Mr. Corp, do you mean to cease abusing our patience? How long is it that your madness of yours is still to mock us? When is there to be an end of that unbridled audacity of yours, swaggering about as it does now? Did not the nightly council placed at City Hall have any effect upon you? Do you not feel that your plans are detected? What is there that you did last night? What the night before? What design was there which was adopted by you, with which you think that any one of us is unacquainted? And if you'd like to read more, you can look for Cicero. But it is gerrymandering, and it is trying the patience of the residents and the council. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Come on up, please. Good evening.
Hi, good evening. My name is Dana D'Agostino, and I live at 369 Cabot Street. On May 27th, I sent an email to the councilors expressing my concern with the fiscal benefits of the project. I felt that the SAC number was substantially underestimated, which would result in an actual loss for the town for this project. The Planning Committee posted a fiscal impact statement for today's meeting stating that the new benefit for the for this project would be $160,000 a year. And in addition to that, it stated that the planning department notes that the number of school children that may reside is not a consideration the council may make as part of the special permit process. I guess my question is, I've never seen this before, and how can this be the case? I'm just curious about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Slattery?
Good evening. My name is Gerard Slattery, and I'm at 227 Walnut Street in Newton. And I just wanted to start by saying thank you to the chairman and to all the members of the Land Use Committee and to the Planning Board. Again, we really appreciate all the hard work that you do, and we know that it's a very difficult task that you guys undertake. I have two letters for the record that I'd like to submit.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charles Walker.
Thank you. My objections and the objections of my family from prior are still the same and still exist, as this current project is essentially the same. I have two, and these letters are dealing with the new issues. In terms of one is with regard to the shadow that's going to be cast. We've had a critique done of the petitioner's shadow study submission by Bowler Engineering or Bowler Consultants. And we've had AEI consultants review it, and we find they found very substantial harm for about 3 months of the year that's being caused on 227 Walnut Street. It's going to be causing new shadow that's going to be on the carriage house, the entirety of the yard, the entirety of the house, and onto the street for, you know, the winter months of the year. So it's a very substantial harm, and I would ask, Mr. Chairman, that you refer back to, you know, that specific part of the law and MU4 and that statute and how that's, you know, how to deal with that and address that. The second part is with regard to the petitioner's amended submission or his new petition. I guess the language is very important in this, and I would ask, what is a buffer? I mean, in terms of what I see here, well, what's been submitted is exactly the same petition as was previous, except now the driveway and a chunk of the parking is now going to remain current zoning. It's not viable as a separate parcel or separate piece of land. You couldn't possibly build anything on it without denying the petitioner access to his own property. So you couldn't possibly build anything on it. And in terms of it being a buffer, it's just the driveway at this point, and it's going to remain a driveway for 160 units and 100 units of retail parking. So it's going to be a pretty busy street, basically, that's going to be at the back of our property and everybody on Foster Street. And to my understanding of the term buffer, I don't think that there's anything that's a buffer at all between our properties and what's being proposed. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on up. Good evening.
Good evening, Kenneth Roberts, 252 Cabot Street, and also Vice President and General Manager of Newtonville Camera in the dump that is in the block of Newtonville that is currently being discussed. For the record, it is not a dump, and we've spent a lot of money over the years as a responsible business keeping our space well-maintained and inviting to the public. I want to thank you, Chairman, for allowing the public to speak to this meeting and for doing so at all the meetings, and thank the Council for all the hard work that they're doing, including the Planning Department, which I think was unfairly slandered at the last City Council meeting for doing their job. I'm a little embarrassed by some of the character of the comments tonight. I agree with Councilor Norton that we should be making our decisions based on discussion and evidence and not based on emotion and slander. I understand that people have different viewpoints. There's really no need for Newton residents to slander other Newton residents because they have a different opinion or because they, you know, they have a vision for how they want to see Newton be updated from what it is now, a wonderful city, into what it can be, an even more wonderful city into the future. The Newton City Council nearly unanimously decided there was the need for a new zoning category, which was the MU4. Subsequently, and it's part of the discussion from my understanding, I wasn't there, but this is from what I picked up from talking with some of the councilors and other people in the city. They decided that there should be a new zoning category. They decided that there were certain parts of Newton that this would be perfect for, and my understanding is this block in Newtonville was one of these places that was specifically mentioned. It's like the top 5 or the top 10 locations for this type of new development. As such, one of the developers in the area decided they wanted to, talk with the city about doing something at the Austin Street parking lot. And that project was voted on and approved nearly unanimously. Now, we have another developer, Mr. Corf, in the Mark Development Group, who basically saw the same thing as the developer at Austin Street and decided that the city was saying, hey, look, we want to do something different. This is a great place for it. Well, the only thing that the city of Newton doesn't have is the money to be able to develop it, and that's where the public and private partnership come together to make the city better. And so they saw an opportunity, and they're trying to make that opportunity happen. But they're not doing so, from my perspective, without listening to public feedback. There have been, as you all know, because you've all been to all these meetings, there have been meetings both at the public here at the Land Use Committee and before that at Newton North and in other places where feedback has been listened to, and I just really don't agree with some of the slanderous characterizations that have been made here tonight. I think all of us here in Newton are above that. I think it's disrespectful, and if you disagree with something based on the points, the merits, then please state that. It's really not necessary to slander anyone, either fellow residents or councilors or on the development team. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hobson. Anyone else after that? A couple more people. If you don't know all of the lineup, I'll get to you. Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Catherine Hobson. I live at 128 Dorset Road. I and others were told there would be no public comment tonight. This explains why you may not see faces you expected to see.
There'll be public comment on the 30th.
Just so we're clear, we'll absolutely be back for that.
That's fine. I took an opportunity. We finished our work early. I try to accommodate public comment as much as possible.
Okay. So I don't have anything to say except to remind you that Livable Newton, which is a coalition of Newton organizations and individuals who support inclusive sustainable development, wholeheartedly support this project. Livable Newton includes Bike Newton, Can-Do, Engine 6, Green Newton, the Jewish Alliance for Law and Social Action, the League of Women Voters of Newton, the Newton Meeting Chamber, Newton Villages, Progressive Newton, and UCAN. And I'd just like to read the first paragraph of a letter that we wrote back in January in support. Livable Newton strongly supports the Washington Place development. It is consistent with the Newton Comprehensive Plan and with our own mission and goals. We wholeheartedly support the rezoning of the site for mixed use four, an option created in 2012 for just such a project and location, and urge you to grant the necessary special permit so that more current and future residents can live, work, and play here. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please. Good evening, Ms. Bliss.
Good evening, Council Laredo. My name is Tamara Bliss. I live at 9 Lewis Street, which is a little more than a half a mile from this project. I think by now you know I typically am speaking for the terrific need for single-floor housing for seniors who want to downsize. I've spoken about that before. But based on listening to the plan tonight, I want to comment on a couple of other things. I think we'll support Emily Norton and the idea of the new way of discouraging people from having cars or encouraging them to give them up. What wasn't mentioned, because I talked to a cousin who was a Newton and is selling her car. Well, I think she can use Zipcar, she's near the Green Line, Lyft, Uber. There are options. And if people don't need cars, they can spend money on some other things. And many of us can no longer, I'm continually meeting people who are no longer driving, and so to have a place that rewards you for not having a car, I think is very exciting, and I'm glad you're going to keep that in the order. I want to comment on the workforce housing. I have a social work background. I worked in the South End in the 60s when it turned, in the 60s when I moved there, it was truly a slum. And then it's gone kind of, because of urban renewal and many other things, very high income housing. But I've worked with people at many different income areas. I think one thing that has, I'm very much in favor of the idea of the 10% workforce housing. Not only agreeing with Councilor Ciccone on the terrific need for fired people, police, teachers to have options, but if you think of the dynamics within the building, if you come in as a low income and maybe you are still a student, a single mom and a student, and you're going to school and wow, you get a good job, oh my God, you're no longer at 50% or maybe even 80%. Your kids are in the Newton schools, and what are you going to do? You might really be evicted. And it's happened traditionally in public housing, the people with the most gumption get kicked out. This gives people an opportunity that there is a different level that they could be counted in. And I think that itself is good, but also just the dynamics of not having just very low-income people and very possibly high-income. So I think there's a lot of creativity in this project, and I commend the councilors on the committee for keeping that in there. And I just want to really emphasize, we have a regional problem. We have a thriving economy and terrible, terrible housing costs and lack of housing and more and more of us retiring. And if we don't provide housing for people who can work, not only in Newton, but anywhere, but we need to do our share, then the experts tell us the economy will slow down. And so we really need to think of all of them. And the other thing, Mark, and I've known you for years, as far as I know, there's no government money going into this program other than maybe Section 8 for the lowest income people. So I don't see why you have an issue with the taxes going for the middle income housing. The developer is working out to keep that in the program. Anyway, I strongly support this. I hope you will think about the whole city, the whole region, and not just the immediate neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Come on up, please.
Good evening. I'm Kevin McCormick at 52 Madison Ave in Newtonville. I very much support this project. I live right down the street from the Village Center. I love the center. I think that this, along with Austin Street, is going to add so much vitality to what already is a good center. It's going to add even more. It is a dense, but to me this is where density belongs, in a village center near transit, is exactly where it should be. But most important, it's going to supply more housing. And I just think the state, Greater Boston, the state, and right here in Newton, housing is just going out of control as far as the price of housing. And we need all housing. You need market rate, you need middle, and you need low. And this will cover it all, and I just think it's a great project, and I ask you to support it.
Thank you, sir. Come on up, please.
Good evening. My name is Anissa Rosamanda. I live in 23 Mercy Court. When I've been reading the Newton tab and when it was disapproved, I'm kind of sad, but I'm so thankful for the persistence of doing this again. And I know that your blessing is more good when you share it to the less fortunate like me, because especially like I also live in Britain, but it's extremely so expensive, but I still keep living here, and I hope that this will be approved. Thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am. I'll take anyone else who wants to speak this evening, but I want to be very clear, the public hearing is staying open. We will have ample opportunity on the 30th for people to comment. I'm going to see if we can adjourn at this point. We're on, Councilor Baker.
Thank you. I just had a question. I guess I would be curious about if it's all right to ask the water department.
Of course.
One of the concerns that this project is, at least people who have been concerned about it have raised, is the issue of whether that this is a particular rezoning that is, frankly, I don't like the term spot zoning because I don't think it's an accurate term, but have we got any case situations where someone has a special permit that is effectively a straddle, where we have a rezoning of a portion of the site and then a special permit that's actually larger? In my experience, as far as I can recall in this body, I've never seen a project where the site rezoned was actually smaller than the special permit area. Have you all had any experience with this or any case law on this? Peter's memory is as good as anybody's.
There are a few cases that do involve situations where a site is bisected by, for example, a municipal boundary. And in those couple of cases, there has been a consideration as to whether or not the type of use that is being put to the land that's in the other municipality is consistent with the use that is being permitted. I think one of them was an apartment complex in Brookline in Boston. And it really varies as to what's permitted in each respective zone, as to whether or not you could have a single development on a split lot. In this instance, given what the uses are in the business district, it's not being rezoned, and the MU, I think they can use a business district for the purposes that they are proposing to serve the project in the MU, but the entire site is still going to be a special permit site.
No, I understand that.
So there aren't many of them. There are a few, and it's going to be driven by the fact specific as to what can be done in each of the respective zones and how that business zone serves the purposes of the MU project, MU4 project.
Okay, thank you.
All right, we are adjourned. We pick this up on the 30th of May. I anticipate asking for a vote on the 30th of May from the committee.